Welcome to Overtures. Since this episode, my guest successfully defended her directing thesis, graduated with her master's, finished a season working at Utah Shakes, and will be taking on a scenic art fellowship at Berkeley Rep this fall. Congratulations, Kenzie. Take your seats, we'll be starting shortly. Happy Wednesday, everyone. Happy Wednesday. I hope everyone's having a good, I was about to say morning, but I'm like, it is fully 1 o'clock right now. still kind of feels like morning sometimes, but that's okay. I hope everyone's doing well. We're going to kind of get straight into it today, which is exciting. Welcome to episode 24. My guest today is a scenic artist, director, and performer located outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She's a proud graduate of Georgia College with a BA in theater and will be graduating in May 2022 from Villanova University with an MA in theater. Her thesis project, Heart's Desire by Carol Churchill, will be performed on campus in late April, so keep an eye out for that. She has worked previously at the Utah Shakespeare Festival, the House Theater of Chicago, Birdhouse Theater, and Victory Gardens Theater. This gal is not only so talented at what she does, but she always brings so much passion, joy, and laughter with her when she does it. I am very, very grateful to have worked with this guest, but also call her my friend. This is Kenzie Bradley.
Hello.
Hi. It's so great to talk to you. I miss you so much.
I miss you too. I mean, Villanova is not the same without you. I will admit that freely.
You are so sweet. You are so sweet. And I love that you are currently joining us today from the conference room in the brand new Mullen Performing Arts Center.
The brand new Mullen Center. Woo!
Yes, exactly.
We're in the midst of a busy time right now, but it's fun and it's chaotic in all the good ways.
For those who don't know, Villanova is in the middle of tech for their production of Curtains, which is going to be the inaugural production on the Mullen Center stage. So if you're out in the Philly area, go check them out. It's going to be a fantastic show.
Oh, it's awesome. You're definitely not going to want to miss it. There's so many lovely scene changes and very large scenic pieces, not even to mention the performances, which are phenomenal.
You're like, but all these things that I worked on first.
all the things that we painted at height and all those wonderful things.
Yeah. Oh my God, I can't even imagine. So obviously people who are watching are like, we already get the gist, but how do we know each other? Villanova. We mostly became friends by working in the shop together, I would say, but I got to know you probably the best because you actually attended and were so genuinely excited for all the Community Matters events and the things we put together. And I think that's where a lot of our friendship stemmed from, was like, I remember part of Villanova, some of the cohort were Community Matters representatives, which were sort of putting together all of the community building events and things like that within the graduate program. And me and my partner, Christy Chori, sent out this wonderful little like welcome care package because we were starting the fall in the middle of the pandemic 2020. And we were like, these kids aren't going to get the same like welcome that we did. So we sent out this gigantic like PDF of all these insane things. And I remember within like 20 minutes of sending it all out, you were like the first person to email me and be like, oh my God, thank you so much. I'm so excited to meet you all. And I was like, this sweet child. I love her so much.
That feels like eons ago. I remember it very clearly, but it feels like forever ago. And then also we worked on your thesis show together.
Exactly.
On Zoom.
Exactly. You stage managed the two productions that I was in during my second year beginning for Bacchae Variations, directed by the lovely James Imes and written by the beautiful Jessica Bedford. And then of course you SM'd Slap Happy, which was chaos in the best way possible. Did you ever think that you'd be like stage managing a film, a full-length film, when you entered graduate school?
To be honest, I didn't think I would be stage managing again, like ever, period, outside of all of that. And it's not because I don't love stage managing. Like, don't get me wrong. I love it. But when I came to Villanova, I was very much on a like, I want to direct, I want to act, and I want to do scenic art. And that's what I'm going
to
do.
And then they're like, surprise, you have a requirement to do. And you're like, okay, here we go.
I was like, I'm gonna go for it. And that's exactly what happened. Is I was like, first of all, didn't expect it to be a film. That was crazy. Didn't expect it to be as funny and as enjoyable as it was. Oh, that was off the charts. So it was, it's like one of my favorite experiences of my first year. Like,
it's a blast. Crazy. Like, how often, yeah, how often do you get to create a full length mockumentary film? Just like in general? Never. It's so much fun. Oh my God.
Also the length of a Marvel film as well. Like a 2.5 hour film.
Yeah, no, like fully. Oh God. I still want to see the Dr. Valerie Joyce cut, which was like,
Five hours or something.
Yeah, like
I think
that.
It was a 5 hour cut.
I'm really curious about that one. Me too. But yeah. Oh, I love her and I miss her. But anyway, getting to the actual like interview part of this episode today. Kenzie, how did you first get started in theater?
Oh my gosh. I hope it's not a cop out to say that I've been doing it ever since I was a kid, but I have a story with it this time. Truly.
That's fine. That's fine.
My mom went to Central Michigan University, which was the school that I went to first before I transferred. And she was an actress. She did like all of the shows there. And then she moved to Chicago so that she could act as well. Mm-hmm. And she was in movies and all this stuff. So around the time that I was born, she was still doing theater in the area. And so she was the mom that like, we always did shows in our house when we were kids. We did so much of like little performing, but I decided because my mom was an actress, I was not going to do theater. I was going to do something different. I was going to be a meteorologist. I was going to run a small business, whatever it was. It wasn't going to be theater.
And so, I love that for you.
And so I was in seventh grade and we were doing Annie the musical, I think it was, and they needed more people. And I was in the choir and they were like, can you come be in the show? And I was like, absolutely not. And they asked me like 2 or 3 times. I said no every time. And so I didn't end up being in the show. I went to see it and the like fear of missing out that I had from being in the audience and seeing this performance, I was like, you know, me and my 10-year-old brain maybe was like, this is the biggest mistake of my life to not have done Annie Jr. on this stage. And I decided that I was gonna abandon my thing of like, I hate theater, and I was gonna do it, and I was gonna be an actor. And that's what happened. The next year I did like Bugsy Malone Jr. and it was like enough for me to be like, theater for life. And that's how I became a theater artist.
I love that. It's so funny because you and I have similar situations and we both had theater parents. And like you and I had 2 completely different versions of it in that, like, for me at least, it was like I grew up around it so much that it like I was like, yeah, this is a thing that's always going to be in my life. Da 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 da. And then it occurred to me in high school, like, oh, right, I can do this as a career because that's what my dad does. Like, it was one of those like duh moments, which is really funny, whereas yours was like vehemently like, no, I will not do it.
I will never perform. It was so like, I was so passionate about it for being 10 years old. Like
the FOMO you experience at 10 years old going, oh no, what have I done?
I've made a terrible mistake. And I literally rethought every decision in that moment. I was like, I should have been doing this
in your short 10 years, in your short 10 years.
A whole decade.
I love that. out of curiosity then, what was like your overture or light bulb moment of like, oh, but like, this is what I want to do with my life?
I think that the moment that happened, and again, not to reference Bugsy Malone Jr., which I then did in like eighth grade, I can't fully remember. I had like a one-line part because I had not performed in the last show. Everybody was like coming back again, but I was happy that I got in. And it was like a like magician part. Like I dressed up like a magician. I had to take a rabbit out of a hat. And I like improvised a line as I was like booed off the stage because like my character is meant to be booed. And I was like, every time, I think is what I said. And my director and like the stage manager laughed so hard and they thought that was like the funniest thing. They told me I had to keep it and I was like, I want to do this forever. Like I could just say stuff and make people laugh, like, sure. So I'd say that was the moment where I was like, yes, theater. And then I like kept searching for those moments as I went into like high school and college, and I still find them, but that was the spark for me, if you will.
I think that's so fun too, because I feel like you bring that same energy even like when it's not in performance, because more often than not, I feel like you're like behind the scenes now with doing like scenic painting, directing, and we'll get in all that. But I think it's really funny because you still have those moments of like, oh, but like, where can I make people laugh? Like, how can I make this fun? And I think that's really cool then to like see that outside of like, or off stage. in a sense, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And I definitely still search for them. That's very kind of you to say that.
Absolutely. And you do so many things. It's insane. So I'm going to try and order these from like your biggest hats or like your biggest hats currently to like your smaller hats. And we'll just like go through them. So first, directing. We'll talk about this more when in relation to your thesis, but you actually directed my 10-minute play.
I did. Oh my gosh. And we did that over Zoom and then it was like broadcast on YouTube. Yeah. That was such a fun experience. First of all, Laura wrote the most hilarious play, Garlic on the Side, Please. You can still see this on the Villanova YouTube. So I strongly encourage
I'll probably like after this, I'll go link it to the like into the description below.
Perfect. It was this super awesome 10-minute play. And like, I pulled some people from the company that I currently work with, Cloud Theatrics, and I had one actor from Florida and then I had one actor from California. So literally opposite, and me and Laura are like in the middle, like, hey, across the continental US. And so it was a great time. Oh, it was such a funny play.
It's iconic. Like, it's great. I've made some edits here and there. So just like small ones, nothing crazy. Yeah. But so I'll have to send that to you at some point. Maybe we can get you to
in person.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, maybe we can direct it again sometime. what was I going to say? Oh, here we go. I'm out of curiosity. I was able to attend like a few of those rehearsals, but for the most part, I stepped back. That way you could do your thing and all that good stuff. Cause it was this virtual play festival that, Villanova Theater did as part of like our studio show. So like, it was kind of like a random one-off thing, but I wanted to make sure that you had your space to put it together and all that fun stuff. But, do you have any particular like approaches or beliefs about directing?
I have a couple of core ones. So first of all, I am like deeply grounded in the reason that theater is important to me is because like theater for social change and how theater can be used to change the world in many various forms. I really feel like that comes from like living in Chicago, where like a lot of the theater that I saw in my high school years was like devised stuff made by like young adults who are like, gun violence in the city is out of hand. And I saw so many like performances that were people responding to things that were happening in the world. I was involved in companies that were like, how do we find the things to respond to? How do we choose? And so I really got like stuck on that. So I think that theater for social change can be used in several different ways. I think it can be used as a call to action. It can be used as a response. It can be used as an escape from really terrible things that are happening. Like if you need that like breather, I think that's also where like the heart of some comedies can lie. So that's probably my most fundamental belief about theater. And I had to write a manifesto in undergrad and I did like a 20-page manifesto about theater for social change. So that, but then also I believe that like rehearsal is a revision process. That's something that we're constantly taught at Villanova, is that rehearsal is a revision process. It should never be perfect. It should continue to be revised. And what you put on the stage is just another revision that could be revised further, could not be, all those things like that. So I've really taken that core value to heart and I try and institute that into my rehearsal process at any given point. I used to be a director who was like, and you stand there at this moment and that never changes. And that was like, you know, novice director Kenzie. I now have like taken a completely different approach of like, let's decide the major pictures that we want to see. Let's decide what you really want out of this scene. Give it a try with what's on stage for you. I love doing viewpoints work, like definitely like having, what are the 20 different ways that you can sit in this chair in front of you?
Right.
So those are some of my biggest approaches to directing.
It's so funny that you like mention like the, you stand here, you stand here, because I think that's a place where every director starts.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's really interesting because some people take a very long time to like get out of it. Whereas when I first started doing directing work, that's where I was. And it was mostly out of an insecurity that I'm like, I want this to look good, as opposed to like giving my actors the freedom and the chance to do it and like show their stuff. And it's really interesting because I think that's something that great directors grow out of. Because they realize they're like, oh, I'm here to guide. I'm not here to dictate. And I think it's really cool also that you talk about theater for social change as well as it always being like a revisionist type of process, because I think those go hand in hand. Because particularly, I'm sure there's like an actual like theory and better words for this, but the idea of like stagnancy or like things being unable to change reflects so much like white patriarchal society, like systems put in place that unfortunately still run many aspects of theater. So I think it's so important that we take a look at like, not even, sometimes people get scared of like theater for social change having to be like this big whole thing. But even if you're just looking at a piece that you're directing in a sense of like, this can always change, like this doesn't have to be final, that alone can already start to contribute to theater for social change. And I think it's fun to have both of those perspectives in a room without it being like this big old scary thing, you know?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think also like, what's the saying that like the saying we've done this before, or this is how it's always done in the English language, is like the most dangerous phrase. Like, I think that Theater for Social Change 100% agrees with that and is like, and let's try it again, try it again, try it again. What are the ways that we can take this piece from the 1900s or the 1600s or BC, if we're talking about the Greeks, and bring that to our current time? I think that is like a core foundation. So I agree with you, is what I'm saying.
Totally, totally. And I was telling you earlier, we're just going to keep going back and forth between your website because it's a great way of showing what the things we're talking about. And I wanted to show a clip from a scene that you've directed on your website because you're a gem and you have all these clips of all these things you've directed. And I'm like, yes, queen. But I couldn't pick which one. Is there anything that you'd want to watch like a little snippet of or that you would particularly want to show?
I absolutely do. The first one with the guy sitting on the bench here, his name is Brandon Penley. Absolutely this clip.
Okay. Awesome. I may not be able to show the full thing, so just let me know, like...
That's all good. I'll stop you.
Trim it. Yeah.
A lot of what I'm about to tell you will only make sense if, when I say something ridiculous, you say to yourself, remember, it was the 90s, a great decade for the American cinema, and Billy Joe Armstrong, but for the rest of us, let's just say we all very happily threw away those pants. Elena and I lived together for nearly 2 years. We were both in school at Madison, me full-time, and Elena on the days that she felt like it. We had this great, funky, threadbare apartment where Court and Spark never stopped spinning. The Goodwill sofa, the macrame on the walls, the bricks and boards holding up our books, my Kerouac and Vonnegut and Tom Wolfe, her Betty Friedan and Ron McEwen and Carlos Castaneda. On our milk crate coffee table, we have the obligatory copies of The Notebook and Bridget Jones's Diary, which I wish we could say we own in some kind of ironic way, but there was no irony here. We had notes written in the margins, sentences were underlined, pages bent in remembrance.
That's probably a good spot. That was actually my undergraduate capstone done at Georgia College. The actor was Brandon Penley, and it was Shooting Star by Stephen Dietz. When I think about the stuff that I'm really proud of, Shooting Star is like the first thing that comes into my mind. It was like a 90-minute piece. It was a comedy with a lot of drama and a lot of like tragedy and like baggage in it. And still thinking about like unpacking it, and probably one of the best experiences that I ever had with a group of actors. So 100% one of my favorite experiences.
And monologues can be so hard to direct. And so it's really great that you were able to find a way to make it physical, because like, I'm finding this out more and more with like directing and like dipping my toes into writing and things like that. I just need things to be happening. I can't do just words. I'm so bad at that. And so like, for him to explore the space in his monologue, I think was a really wonderful directorial choice.
Thank you so much. Yeah, definitely. We had a lot of fun with figuring out like, you're suddenly going to be transported into the room that he's talking about. And we did like, I'm not kidding, like 20 to 30 minute exercises of him exploring the space and finding the different things in that house. It was a process. But in the end, like I tell him all the time, I'm like, use that for reals. Take it. Like, you should absolutely be using it. So it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it looked really great. You're also a very fabulous scenic painter. What got you into scenic painting?
I had never even known what scenic painting was until my junior year of undergrad. I had just transferred schools, and that's when I was at Georgia College. And I had just like there was an elective course that was like, here's how to paint scenery, here's how to do some fake finishes. And I was like, I have an extra class that I need to take. I never get to paint. I used to paint all the time as a kid. I'll paint now. And I took the course and it was my favorite, like instantly, I want to say like class three, the second week of school, it was my favorite class, just learning about the different textures and that like, there's really no limits to how scenic painting can be done. Yeah. Like you can use a sponge, you can use joint compound. There's so many different elements of it that I was like, I want to keep doing this. And so I started taking independent studies in like my final year of school. And then I was like, but what if I look for jobs for it as well? And then I ended up having job opportunities as well. So like continuing to expand my knowledge with it was a huge part of what made me keep doing it.
Yeah. Like last summer you worked with Utah Shakes as a scenic painter, which I'm sure was insane because they do so many shows in one summer.
They do nine shows a summer. It's insane. So they have three separate spaces. They have the outdoor theater, which is like very much a replica of the Globe. Like they try to keep that aesthetic with it. So they have that one that's called the Engelstad Theater. They have the Randall Theater, which is like the indoor one, very like proscenium style. And then they have the Ains Theater, which is a black box. And they do three shows in each. So I got put on, I was a swing for all of them, but I essentially got put on one team and I would work with them until another theater needed me. And then I would swap and then I would come back and it was a whole thing.
Oh my gosh, that's so fun. And in relation to scenic painting, we did have an Instagram question. This is in relation to, I think, one of the photos that you had sent in for posting your bio and pictures. So there's a photo of you drawing with a stick while standing up. Please give the context and why are you standing doing it?
I got you. So essentially a lot of the scenic painting, especially if you're painting on like a drop, which like if you ever go to a ballet or you go to like the Nutcracker or anything like that, there's those huge paintings of the scenery on the back. And that is where scenic painting kind of originated. It grew into like fake finishes and stuff like that. But to do those, it is very tricky to constantly be bending down and like drawing from that perspective. It can hurt your back in the long run, and it's just kind of a dangerous practice. So scenic artists take bamboo sticks and they put charcoal on the end of bamboo sticks. They put brushes on the end of bamboo sticks, everything. And you have to teach yourself to paint it with a completely straight back and the bamboo stick pointing down and drawing it from that way. So essentially, it's an extension of your hand and an extension of the pencil in that way. However, it is not an easy skill to learn. It definitely takes a couple weeks of practice because, you know, when you're up close to something, it's super easy to get a crisp line. Like, you can come in, it's super easy to draw what you want, but from so far away, you have to, like, keep a really steady hand, you have to concentrate, and it, like,
it took me probably...
Know how much pressure, know to like that you're when you pick it up, your hand's not gonna like swing a little bit and you'll like add an extra mark. It took me, I wanna say, maybe 5 months to like get even close to mastering it. And even now, I'll do something and then I'll pick the bamboo stick up and be like, oh, that
like, oh, crap.
Swooped over there. So yeah, that's why I do it. But it's a safe practice to keep your back from like getting injured because as a scenic, it is so easy to like get into the habit of doing something wrong for a really long time and then waking up really sore, not being able to do the same thing the next day. You have to like keep your body in the best, kind of like a performer. You have to keep your body in good place. You have to hydrate. Otherwise you just won't, you'll hit your 30s and you're like, oh, my back. So, you know,
yeah,
that's what we do it for.
Yeah. And of course we can talk about scenic painting all we want, but it's better if we show pictures.
Absolutely.
And it's so funny that you talk about like the bamboo, working with the bamboo stick, because I got a taste of that when we were doing Slap Happy, which I'm getting down here to. I got to find the picture of the I don't know what to even call it.
The building?
This big boy right here. Painting that was a trip and a half.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Because there are several ways in which you can, like, paint something, because you know you get a picture of something and the designer will be like, this is how you want it to be painted and that's the elevation, but you can either project it onto a very large screen and trace it from grids. That way, or you could do layout, which is what we did for this one. So you basically take the image and you break it into squares and then you draw those squares on your huge canvas and you like draw what is in each individual square. And we Laura and I absolutely did some layout work on that piece.
Yeah, I remember doing lots of work around these windows here with some of the shading. And again, with that big bamboo stick, trying to get that super straight line and not like accidentally hitting another window and all this other stuff. So crazy stuff. But also in general, the scenic painting on Slap Happy was super fun.
So fun.
Like with the Harlequin squares, chef's kiss.
So much taping out.
So much taping, but it was so rewarding to pull like that string of tape up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then like this broken up like Harlequin and painting on the periactoy. Super fun. But let me show some of like probably the more crazy ones. So here is something that you like some of the shows at Utah Shakes. So there's pirates.
And talk about bamboo work on pirates, getting those individual floorboards on that set. We were, me and the team were like standing up there painting those straight lines forever. It was
crazy. I'm sure. Well, and especially like even looking at the set here for Ragtime.
Mm-hmm.
I'm absolutely sure a similar insane. Situation. Are there 100%. Other ones? Are there other ones or favorites of yours that I should point out?
I would definitely pop back up to Revolutionists because that was just a crazy experience. There was so much painting in that one. The set was massive. We had like a thrust stage. So the floor itself, we did full pieces of like Luan and then they were ripped up and like put into various paneling. So we painted the floor, but we weren't responsible for like how the aesthetics of the floor would look. That was really more of the scenic, that was more of the carpentry crew. Mm-hmm. But getting these walls was like insane. We had so many different like steps on that one. I think the walls, we had to repaint them. So it ended up being maybe a 10-step process if you count the repaint. So there was a lot that went into that one.
There's the full set there with Miss Sherry showing it off. But
what a great mentor she is. Like
absolutely.
I wouldn't be where I was without Sherry Giroux. She's been such a help to me.
Yeah. No, some crazy good scenic art. And we can't talk about scenic art and Sherry Giroux if we don't talk about props. You've done props as well.
Absolutely.
It's so interesting to me that more often than not, and particularly like in Nova's shop, props and painting went together so often, which doesn't necessarily like you wouldn't necessarily put them together. But I can imagine that's not always the case in other shops. But maybe I'm wrong.
I think for the most part, that's true. I mean, like I came in and I had to do an interview to apply for the position. And I had come in being like, I know so much about paint. I know very little about props. And Sherry was like, that's okay. We're gonna figure it out together. So like, because, you know, Sherry's had such a hand in both that like, she's like 50-50 with her knowledge. It's insane how much she knows. But really, I've actually spent most of my time at Villanova doing like paint work. However, that does not excuse the fact that I have definitely worked on some props. We built a birthday cake for Slap Happy and that involved like creating the layers. I think we used foam. There was a lot that went into that one.
Lots of crazy stuff.
So much.
And we have pictures of that, so no worries.
We do have pictures of that. And then with Beckett Bites, we had to build a rocking chair, or like we had a base chair, but we had to make it rock, and we had to make it rock quietly because the director, with very good reasoning, was very particular on the type of chair he wanted, and we could not find one anywhere. We were able to find like a regular chair, but then I had to like hand sand the rockers. We had to like stain them perfectly. It was a crazy experience, but it's probably one of the props that I'm like proudest of. It turned out so well.
Yeah. And we have some pictures here. Here's the rocking chair we were just talking about. It's beautifully stained.
It looks like
a normal rocking chair. You know what I mean? It doesn't look like you necessarily like built it, which is really saying something.
Thank you.
Here's the birthday cake from Slap Happy.
Oh yeah.
So fun.
So much beading. So much.
I know. Beading. I love that those are like beads from like Mardi Gras beads, essentially.
Literally. And then we took like a caulk gun and put like a tip on it that you would for a frosting cake. And that's how we got like the individual accents in there. It was crazy.
It was so fun. And we have a bunch of other fun set pieces over here, or like props pieces. This is a gel for a light, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to do that for a class one time. And so I basically laid out how I wanted the tiny figures to look. And then to get them out, you have to like, you can't use an X-Acto knife. You have to take a pin and tap it in, almost like a stick and poke tattoo. Like that's how you have to get it out. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, it's so specific and so detailed. It's really gorgeous to look at. And then of course people can take, was this the taping?
Yeah, that was like contact paper.
That's not real wood. That's contact paper on IKEA furniture. That was a trip and a half.
Absolutely. I'll never forget like the peeling the bubbles were, it's like with contact paper, bubbles always happen.
It's essentially putting on wallpaper. And so like the bubbles that develop are just so horrible to try and get out. But
insane. I don't know how you do a wall. Like, I don't know how you do a wall.
No idea. Truly no clue. This is why I am not a contractor or anything to that extent or effect. but yeah, no, you have an extensive amount of scene shop work, and it's really cool to look at. But aside from working with your hands in the shop, you've also been, we've talked about stage management, but you're also a production manager for Cloud Theatrics. What is Cloud Theatrics?
Cloud Theatrics is a completely virtual international company, which just operates out of several different time zones. So we have company members in America, in every time zone in America. We have company members from the UK and Ireland. We have company members from Australia. So essentially a group of collaborators. It was formed on TikTok, and we're committed to performing like live or virtual theater that is live in any of its given forms. So we do a lot of like YouTube live content. We have a lot of TikTok content. We do musicals. We like devise plays. We do plays that have already been written before. So we basically just perform in any way that we would like to. We started out in the pandemic by doing a very Potter musical because there was a bunch of TikTokers who really wanted to. And I was like, cool, sounds good. I did not know anything about this. My friend Anna Gould had contacted me and was like, I know that you just graduated with directing. We need a director real bad. We also need a stage manager. And I was like, I can do both. Why not? Just for this show on
Let
Zoom.
Let me just stage manage both. And direct this.
I was like, you know what? For Zoom, I'll do anything. And we ended up having like a cast full of really famous, not really famous, like Harry Potter TikTokers who various levels of like content engagement, and they all came in on the production together, and we blocked it over Zoom. We learned the music over Zoom. We choreographed over Zoom. And before we even thought of doing it on YouTube, we actually invited people into a Zoom room and had them watch it. We ended up having like 300 people watch these Harry Potter TikTokers do this Harry Potter musical, and it got such traction that we ended up forming the company out of it. So I think the company is celebrating its 2-year anniversary this July. Crazy to think that the pandemic has been going on for 2 years, but like 2-year anniversary this July, that's where we're at. So yeah.
That's so exciting. What are some funny aspects of working as a production manager for a digital theater company? I know we've already talked about the fact that like everyone's in a million different time zones.
You have to literally, when you're making a schedule, especially for like, you know, staff meetings or like pre-production meetings, you have to list every time zone, which means that you have to get the time zone correct on every single time. And there have been times where I've been like 1 hour off in one time zone. So we just have people who don't show up because I had the time wrong. So getting the time zones is so important. We found the silliest moment, though, is like daylight savings time in America and daylight savings time in Britain happen on different weeks. So there is a time where like there is only a 4-hour gap between like America and the UK, and you have to know when that happens because they will get confused. So time zone management is probably like one of the biggest parts of my job.
Oh my gosh. And you've directed for them besides Harry Potter musical, right? Red Line Anthology.
Yes. So my best friend and one of my college roommates and colleagues, Julia Witten, also joined the company with me as one of my production associates. And she wrote a whole play when we were in undergrad. We had planned on doing it in person. Pandemic hit. That did not happen. However, in our first ever Cloud Theatrics season, she pitched the show as an option. We had a group of people review it, send her edits, like work on it in that fashion. And then we decided that we were going to do it. So I got picked to direct it mostly because I was so familiar with it before. And we did the whole thing. You can also watch that on YouTube right now. We've got it up.
Incredible. I'll link it below.
Perfect. Sounds good. Yeah, it was a great show. The way that she had written it was it was initially a solo performance piece, and it was like several sets of solo performances, but then she broke them down into like individual characters. Some characters are seen in one scene and then never seen again. Some carry through. The main character is still her. It's still named Julia, but several different characters of people in her life and like those interactions. And it's a very like very loving tale that I went on that piece, especially on Zoom. Very different.
Yeah. And that was also crazy because you guys didn't do that one live. Like you filmed it. So it was watching it over Zoom as they were filming it. And then, all that crazy.
Having to go through all of the editing post-pod phases and then having it go on YouTube. And we normally are committed to doing stuff live, but just with this one, with the amount of technical elements involved, we were like, let's see what happens if we post it as like a movie style thing. And it was a good success. So yeah.
And it's still live in that people were getting to access it as it was like premiering live on YouTube. Oh, and yeah. I think that's really special as well.
It was so nice. I watched it from the beach. It was good.
I love that. And then jumping from production management, you're also the current educational dramaturg at Villanova. How has that been? Also, a side question of how would you describe the function of an education dramaturg versus a production dramaturg? Because people don't necessarily know a lot about dramaturgy.
No, so I'll hit on that first. So the production dramaturg is really responsible for like the curation of the show. Like they come in with all of the research. They have a ton of discussions with the director on how they want the show to look. I've often heard a dramaturg described as like the director, the protector of the script. And I think that's actually a great way to describe it. So the education dramaturg comes in and is like, hey, dramaturg, can I have all your research? I want to take all the amazing work that you did and really make sure that like the educational system of Villanova, the schools in the area get access to this material so that they can form lesson plans around it. They can come in and be like, here's a guide on everything you need to know. Here's what I can teach my students so that when they see the show, they know what they're expecting. So I'm one of the education dramaturgs, the other one, Kat Ross Klein, who is also in my program. We are wholly responsible for creating education guides for each show. So again, also on my website as well, but these guides are essentially responsible for like, here's a breakdown of the script. Here are the major topics that are dealt with in this play. Here are some questions that you can ask your students about it. Here's how you can form a discussion. Here's some activities regarding the play and all of those things. So we hand those to like the group of professors at Villanova, and then they read them and decide if that's something that they want their students to engage with or not. We often get a lot of the like identity courses coming in because so much of theater is about your identity and your response to things that are happening in around you. So we have a lot of people who come in and do that. We also then go into classrooms with our own activities, help lead discussions. We'll come in either before a show, after a show, sometimes both, and really gauge the students' responses to the performance, which is helpful for Villanova as well, just like so that they know what their response to the shows are and what discussions are created from them, but also for the teachers as well, in case they didn't quite understand something or like they need help guiding this discussion and we're trained in that. So we get to come in and we get to do it. So yeah, it's a great experience.
It's such a cool program too. And I think it's something that should be utilized more. I mean, dramaturgy as a whole needs to be utilized more, but also educational dramaturgy so that you can figure out those kinds of responses from audiences, develop discussions, all that good stuff. How has the position been this year? How's it going?
It's been busy. It's been a lot of fun. And it really just depends on the type of show that we're doing. So like the first show of Villanova season was White by James Imes, and that gained a ton of traction. Like we were going into classrooms with different activities, working with the production dramaturg on like, what activities would you like brought into the classrooms and stuff like that. So we had a ton of traction around that. And then we did other shows like Beckett Bites, which did have traction, but like a different kind of traction. Like for White, it was more responding to the issues that the play brought in, and Beckett Bites was more of like what just happened in the script and like how can we
Beckett's like what
Samuel Beckett's like, here's some things, and you're like, what?
You're like, what did I just watch? Yeah.
So a lot of it was like decoding Beckett's language, so it's really a different task depending on which show you're working on. So like with Curtains is a murder mystery. So we've been talking a lot about like Golden Age musicals and like murder mystery and how it's been used. And also there's a lot of like period stuff in it in terms of like the costuming is very specific to a time period. So we've been focusing a lot on that, focusing a lot on parody. Like the role. Oh, a lot of parody. So all of our guides have been really centered around that. So it really just is like a game of chance on which play you get and how you want to handle it and how your dramaturg handles it. So yeah, it's been good. It's just various levels of busy depending on what you're doing.
Understandably so, because they could all demand a completely different amounts of commitment, be it like in different classrooms on campus or otherwise. So that's really cool. And I'm really glad to hear that there's been so much traction with the plays this season, because that's super, super exciting. And speaking of Beckett Bites, you performed this year. You were in Beckett Bites at Villanova. How was it to work on short Beckett plays? Because
oh my gosh,
they are very demanding. And for those who maybe aren't as familiar with Samuel Beckett, he's very, I hesitate to say, absurdist in many ways. I know that I'm going to be making some professor mad, being like, no, it's this genre. But like, But no, Samuel Beckett is a lot and very demanding of a performer. So I'm curious, what was your experience working on that?
I have to say that it was an overwhelmingly positive experience. Like, I did come in a little afraid because I was in two of them. I was in Come and Go, which is like a total 30 word play. It is very short. The memorization demands were not like not crazy. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, I was in Play, which was another 3-person play. However, the demands were very large. There was a lot of language. Sometimes it didn't always follow right. The order, like there was no particular order of operations in terms of like what was said and when was said. It's not like a conversation that you could follow. You were kind of telling your own story at various chunks throughout the play. So okay. There was a lot of like, there was a lot of demand for that one, more than I would say for Come and Go, because you could follow the plot of that one. There was a plot in Play, but it's like very hard to follow. So I started like straight off the bat memorizing. Like first week I was like, you're gonna learn what you're saying and you're gonna say it and you're gonna memorize it and you have to do it fast, because we had like a 3-week turnaround for that one. It was short and there was a lot that went into it. But the director Ed Sobel was like so helpful in making us understand what was said, why we're saying it, why we're here, what we want. And that was like, the rehearsal room itself was so nice. I don't think I've been in a rehearsal room quite like that before, especially where we all came in, no idea what we were saying. And by the time we left, we understood it so much and like felt like we had this like special bond in the way that we understood it, that we were excited to bring to an audience, but also knew that it was going to be hit or miss depending on, you know, what resonated with some people and what didn't resonate with people. It was probably like, I feel like I'm always saying one of my favorite experiences, but it really was in that, like, I hadn't performed in a long time. Like, I think it had been 3 years since I had done something on a stage, and to hop right in with Beckett was not an easy task, but like the help of the director and the help of the dramaturg, Chelsea Dramel, she came in with such like, here's some background and here's what can help you. And having her in the room like made everything so much easier for all of us that I would want to do more Beckett, which a lot of people won't say, but
yeah, that's a big sentence right there.
That's a big sentence. Absolutely. It's crazy.
Well, and I know that you joke that you're like, I know I say this about everything that I do, but I think that's like in terms of enjoying all these experiences, but like, that's also just like you as a human and the love that you bring into the room. And I think that's so special. And I hope, like, obviously I hope everyone gets to work with you and get to experience that. But like, I it's so fun to see the joy and passion you bring into all these projects, because I'm a firm believer of like what you put into it is often what you'll get out of it as well. Obviously that's not always the case. The exception proves the rule, but I think all of these that you're talking about is definitely that is you putting in all this joy and excitement and being like, I don't know if this is gonna work, but it's gonna be fun.
But we're gonna try. It's like throwing paint at a wall.
Exactly. and it's so fun to see to watch you reap those rewards too. And then of course upcoming is your directing thesis. Whew. Yes, Heart's Desire by Carol Churchill, who is also a very demanding playwright in her own right. So how did you end up choosing Carol Churchill?
So really, I had come to my advisor with like 7 different plays, and I only had one that was Carol Churchill. The rest of them were all very like based in realism or based in comedic realism. I came in with a couple goals. Villanova only allows you to do 45-minute pieces for your thesis. And I was like, well, I don't want to do a cutting. That's not really what my goal is like on how to craft something. I wanted to have a full something, and I wanted to work within the parameters of what that was. And so I had come in with like, maybe I'd do a night of 2 short plays. Maybe I'd do a night of like this one piece. And my advisor was like, these are great. I think you could push it further. And he was like, I want you to keep looking at some Carol Churchill. I was like, oh no.
You're like, I don't know.
I'm like, ugh. And I love Carol Churchill. And also like the way that I find her almost more accessible Beckettian style. Like you can watch it in a way that you can watch a Beckett play and still pull things from it that you might not grab from a Beckett play. And so I wasn't opposed to it. And I started doing more research. I looked at Far Away by Carol Churchill, and I came to my advisor with that. And he was like, well, how are you going to handle the parade of 1,000 hats that's in that play? And I was like, oh no. And he said, like, here's 5. Look at these. If you don't like them, we can look at something else. And one of those was Heart's Desire. And I was very specific in terms of the parameters that I wanted. Like, I wanted a single set. I did not really, one of my goals did not involve like choreographing really intense scene changes. And so I was like, I just want a box set style, this many characters. This is what I was going for. And Heart's Desire, at first glance, I was like, oh, this fits all of those things. Because Heart's Desire, the plot essentially, the plot is simple in that it is a mother, a father, and an auntie waiting for their adult daughter to come home for the first time. She has been gone for several years in Australia, and this is the first time they are having her back. This seems simple enough, but because it is Carol Churchill, she inserts like repeats in the middle of it. So like the play will start to go a specific way and she'll stop it and start it again. And at one point the father like goes on a rant about how badly he wants to eat himself. At another point, a bird runs across the stage. At one point, a horde of children run across the stage. The wife announces an affair two separate times and both of those get cut off. In total, there are 26 repeats.
I'm like, this is like Constellations, The Bald Soprano, and Beckett mixed together. Like, this is crazy.
Absolutely. And if you ever seen, I think it's David, is it David Ives, All in the Timing? There's like a scene in there that is basically this exact same thing, but the play has to fully restart again. So there are 26 total repeats. And in the end, I won't give it away, so I will stop there. But it is a 40-minute piece. I'm working all with students at Villanova, working with a full production staff of Villanova students, full cast of Villanova students. And yeah, we go up April 27th and 28th. It's going to be, there is scenic painting involved. I'm doing a lot of scenic painting for the show.
That's so exciting.
It's so fun.
So exciting. Where are you in the process?
So we have finished table work and we're about 1.5 weeks into blocking. We have this week off because of tech at Villanova right now is kind of crazy. Yeah. But I think we're finishing up the blocking phase next week, moving into like cleanup work, moving into like incorporating some of the larger elements. Like, again, we have an amazing person here, Jabine Schwab, making the bird puppet. And so we'll have the bird puppet come in. We have a child actor coming in for it as well. So we're kind of at the phase of like, let's figure out the movements and then we'll really move into like why we're doing what we're doing. We kind of have an idea of what the repeats mean and who is causing them or what is causing them. So we have a lot going on right now, but
I'm sure the table work has been so much fun.
We had like murder boards where like we wrote down people's names. We'd like connect the lines and be like, is this person responsible for this? So funny.
All the red string like attaching from like moment to person and being like, this person did it.
It's like the meme. Like I'm like standing up there with the board like, and this one and this one and this one is so much.
I love that so much. So it sounds like you're also starting to get to the point of like starting to like get book out of hand. Which I'm sure
book date is next Monday.
Ooh, I'm sure that's also very nerve-wracking.
Yeah, but they're gonna do so good. That like because so many lines are repeated, they're like already figuring an amount. I'm like, y'all got this. I'm not worried.
I love that. So I love that. How's it been like in general so far? Has there been anything like really interesting about the process that's come up that you're like, oh?
I feel like there are so many things that you don't notice because like, you know, I've read the play 20 so times because I had to do a thesis proposal on it. I had to come in with all my prep work, but I didn't hold an audition process because like we're all busy and I kind of had an idea of what I was looking for. And so I just asked those people if they wanted to do it. They said yes. And I brought them into the room. I know, right? So the table read was like the first time I had ever heard voices that weren't mine. And by the end of that night, I had to go sit down and be like, this thing I didn't realize. I was talking to one of my mentors, Dr. Valerie Joyce, and I was talking to her about the script analysis of the piece. And she was like, script analysis brings you into the room. You may completely throw it out and reject it upon the table work or the blocking. And that's what I'm doing. It's like, I'll find all these things that I came in with and then I'll do them. And I'm like, oh no, that doesn't work anymore.
I love that she said that though. That makes my heart feel very happy just because like, I sometimes would hesitate to like be set on a certain thing and in terms of her script analysis class, just because I was like, I don't know, this is my interpretation, but like, who knows? And then hearing that, I'm like, well, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Cause if it's performed differently, then like, it's going to be different. Yeah, but 100%. That's so exciting to then like hear it from different people's mouths and go, oh, I'm thinking of it in this way now, because I think that already opens up the collaboration. Like, I mean, obviously that's a very simple interaction of just hearing your actors say it and then going, okay, I'm going to change things up a little bit. But from the sounds of it, you probably have really awesome actors who have been so wonderful in collaborating and being like, can we do this? Or like, can we try this?
The way that these, the ideas of these actors are like off the wall, bonkers, amazing. My favorite line in rehearsal is, can I just try something? I'll be like, please go ahead and try something. See how it goes. And every time they come in with something new, I feel like we have rehearsals really late at night just because of Villanova's schedule. And the way that they come in, like with the energy ready to go after the first run, they're like fully immersed in the world of the play. I'm like, I feel like my job is a lot easier than it should be with how much they've been getting into it. So it's been great.
No, truly. One of my, my directing professor in college, he always said like casting is 80% of being a director in terms of like having the right cast. And it sounds like you very much lucked out. So that's so exciting. I'm very excited for you and I really want to see this and support you and all that, but yay. Less than a month to go. And then you get to defend your thesis.
And then I get to defend it. And then I'm off doing other things.
Yes, and that's the next thing I guess is we're going to talk about. What do you have coming up this summer?
So after the completion of my time at Villanova, I will be booking it straight to the Utah Shakespeare Festival again to do another round of scenic painting. I will be in a different theater this time. We will be doing, I think I'll be painting Sweeney Todd and King Lear and maybe one more. So lots of that kind of stuff. And then I'm booking it to Ireland to do my like final hurrah with Villanova. I will be going to Dublin and Galway, working with the Lear Academy, and then also like going into the archives of Galway and writing papers and creating art based on that. And then after that, who knows? It's August, so I guess we'll see.
Crossing fingers. So excited to hear all the things that'll be upcoming post-Ireland. But you're going to have an amazing summer. You have so many good things lined up, and I'm just so dang happy for you. Like, just simple as that. Simple as that. You're a gem. You're a gem. Thank you. And we're coming to the end of this. Crazy. Always goes so quick. Where can people find you on social media?
Absolutely. So my Instagram is kitkatkens. I believe it's kit.cat.kens. My website is www.kenziebradley.com. You can find me on Facebook, Kenzie Lynn Bradley. And I think that's all in my social media. Yeah, I think that's it. So yeah.
Perfect. And I think you have one specifically for scenic work as well.
That is true. Yes, it is kenzie.butt.scenic. And you can also see that on my regular Instagram as well. Yeah. You can click from there. Yeah.
Amazing. And I will link all the things below. So like, this is more of a formality if nothing else, but you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Marjoram. Also my website, lauramarjoram.com. You can find the show on Instagram at Overtures Show. There's two S's, but I promise you it's correct. And then if you're watching this episode, hooray, you found us. You found the YouTube. Search Overtures Show. Give us a like, subscribe, comment. We always want to open up dialogue. And we also try to encourage people to watch live and say hello and all that good stuff. But Kenzie, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
Oh, let me think. Well, thank you so much for listening. And I keep listening to Overtures. It's a great show.
Thank you. Yeah. Amazing. And with that, I hope everyone has an amazing day.